exciting.
Welcome to PDGA Radio with Grant Zellner and Jennifer Allen, an episode that's out a few days earlier than usual, but for good reason. In this episode, you're going to hear about a deadline to an opportunity you have to get involved with a really cool project. But I'm not going to be the one to tell you about the project. I'm going to let our guests do that. We'll talk about this project and several other interesting topics before we let them go. I'm talking about none other than Steve Dodge and, a bit later on, his brother Todd Dodge, who, by the way, is joining us all the way from London at this present time. Hope you enjoy the episode. Let's get into it. Steve Dodge and Todd Dodge on PDGA Radio. Steve Dodge of MVP Open fame with us in the PDGA virtual studio. And we're thrilled to have you, Steve, for one. I'm guessing some people are confused, though, because, well, it's April. It's not September. So what could we possibly be talking to Steve Dodge about in April rather than September? And that's my first question for you. So first of all, welcome.
Well, thank you, Grant. It's great to be here. Hello, Jen. Great to see you
again.
Hello. I love seeing all of our smiles in this venue. So what do we have to talk about? One thing that we're doing at Maple Hill is we're trying to expand the spectator event, the time that people come to watch things at Maple Hill. And we have the Maple Hill Invitational, which is a college team match play event going on at the end of April. Another exciting thing is the MVP Open tickets go on sale soon. And my brother and I have a Kickstarter on, have a board game on Kickstarter, and the Kickstarter ends the last day of the Music City Open, which is coming up in a couple of weeks. So we've got a bunch of stuff going on in April.
Okay.
Man,
so first thing,
where do we begin?
Yeah, I know. So let's try to do it this way. Cause trying to keep organized when we're talking to you, Steve, because of the things that you have going, the irons that you have in the fire is really, really challenging. So let's do it this way. Let's talk first about this college event and the other announcements related to things going on at Maple Hill before MVP comes along. Now, some of them might have to do with MVP, but let's talk about that. Okay. And then, you know, let's go into Birdie Pro and those exciting announcements. And then by the end, I'm sure we're going to get into some cool hot takes and some other things like that by the end. And that'll be what, you know, keeps us all just riveted here to our headphones. So let's start where first things first. Tell us more about this Maple Hill Invitational Collegiate event and what that entails.
So April 29th and 30th, we're going to have a bunch of nationally ranked colleges bring 4 to 6 of their best players up to Maple Hill, and they will compete against 4 to 6, maybe even 8 of our best regional colleges, who will bring their best 4 to 6 players. And they compete in match play format on a special college disc golf course. College disc golf configuration at Maple Hill.
Okay.
So maybe a few different holes.
Yeah. Well, no, they'll be the same holes. Like hole one, they'll probably play diamond, and hole two, they might play gold. And we
gotcha.
Try to, it's interesting. College kids, I don't want to generalize, but in general, these guys are 980 to 1,000 rated players, and they can throw super far, and they don't always have the greatest touch. So
right.
We want to design a course that works for their game. The same way, Jen, that we designed a course that works for the mm-hmm. women's game. And if old people ever came to Maple Hill, we'd probably design a course for them.
Yeah, you definitely put so much thought into who's going to play that course. And the property is so amazing that you can just continue to tweak it to yeah. whoever wants to walk onto the course. So
I can't wait till the Maple Hill conversation for the MVP, because we've got some really exciting changes.
It's like biting his tongue. There's so much fun stuff.
Can you tell us? Can you tell us any of the colleges that you know, at least at this time, are going to be represented?
So we've got the regional colleges. We've got WPI coming back. We've got Rensselaer. We've got Rochester. There's RPI and RIT. I get them kind of confused which is which. I think RIT is Rochester and RPI is Rensselaer, but I might have that backwards. And then WPI, UMass, Dartmouth, and then Missouri and Ferris State, who are both going to college nationals mm-hmm. again. I think they were – actually, there was a big controversy with Ferris State last year at college nationals. One of their players was deemed ineligible as they were winning the tournament. And then Missouri went on to win. And happily, both of those teams came to the Invitational last year and obviously made it to the finals. And Missouri eked them out. And I'm getting goosebumps. It was such an amazing battle. Because we set the number one player on each team head to head in a match play, and then the number two players in a match play, and then three and four in a doubles match play. So there's a total of 3 points, and whoever gets two of them wins the match and advances on. And Missouri and Ferris State and a bunch of the regional colleges will be back. And we do have a couple more spots open. So if you're a college that wants to come up and play Maple Hill, go ahead and go to MapleHillDiscGolf.com and find Maple Hill Invitational and register.
Cool. All right. Is there going to be any coverage of any kind? Post-produced or otherwise?
Grant, you're doing a very good job of interviewing me. I should have mentioned that. We are planning on having 6 to 8 cameras out there covering as many of these battles as we can. Right. It's a 4-round tournament, and as the rounds go along, we'll be focusing more and more on the top cards. And the plan is actually to make a 45-minute to 2-hour feature documentary about the event. We don't want to go through the shot by shot of, I mean, there'd be a lot of coverage. And instead, we're trying to get some interviews and build up interest into these colleges and the players and let people get emotionally vested into a media presentation. So, yes.
Hopefully this will help disc golf grow into the colleges and we start to really see some actual scholarships and, you know, this as a true sport, like Ultimate, you know, Ultimate's been in a lot of the colleges for a while now, but disc golf is kind of like tries to like sneak in a little bit and then kind of gets forgot about. So maybe this will help push it over the edge.
It's been very fun working with John Baker at College Disc Golf and Pete May and the crew. They have got something very special here, and I've been talking with John. He's excited to hone College Disc Golf into exactly mm-hmm. what you said, Jen, and make it something that gets kids. Can I call college kids mm-hmm. kids?
Sure.
It's when you get to an age like everybody under 30 is
in
a
this
kid.
Group. We're good.
So to get the kids going out, getting excited about playing disc golf and on a college team. And I think they are on the right path, and I'm really excited to be able to offer the Maple Hill as another, mm-hmm. As another venue for college disc golf.
And it's such a great experience anyways, just to be there. So for those kids, it's such a win-win. For sure.
It was really fun last year watching Missouri, who did beat Ferris State in that last battle. The kids all said, yeah, we want to go jump in the pond. We had special towels for them. It was a really fun experience.
That's awesome.
Having said all that, the ponds in April in Massachusetts are a little cold.
But they're young.
They're young.
Kids jump in any kind of cold. Exactly.
It's a cold plunge.
They'll be fine. Yeah, they'll be fine.
Yeah, it was great. It was a really fun time, and we're excited to build this into something special.
Now, Steve, we're not going to leave Maple Hill entirely, but we do have something else to talk about before we get to a few more announcements you have related to Maple Hill and later on the 2023 MVP Open. Before we get there, though, we've got a new guest in the studio joining you. We now have both of the Boda Brothers.
Hey-o. Welcome, Todd.
How you doing?
Doing good. Excited for maybe another announcement or two out of you guys.
Yeah, there's got to be a reason we have the two of you here. And one of you, Todd, where, are you in London? Are you in England right now? Are you?
I'm in London, yes.
Wow. Oh, wow. Look at us being international.
Your arms must be tired. Flying all the way there.
London to LA.
Woo.
Very good.
That's a flight. That's a journey. For real. But seriously, though, everybody's wondering, why are you here?
You could play Birdie Pro 9 times on that flight.
Probably could.
Oh, boy. Yeah. I have a feeling that's where this conversation is about to go.
Birdie Pro, wait a second. Wasn't it? Is that a new name?
That is a new name. Birdie Pro is a completely new game. It is backwards compatible with Birdie, though.
And explain there's that the rub. A little bit okay. More. Yeah. So we've got the makers of Birdie here in PDGA Radio Studio, but talking about a new game called Birdie Pro. What's going on, guys?
Todd, you want to talk? You want me to talk?
You got it.
Okay. So if you've played Birdie, then you understand. You'll understand some of these improvements. We should talk about what Birdie is first. Basically,
yeah, go right ahead.
It's a dice and card game and a strategy game. At the beginning of the game, you build your player, you build your karma, you build your distance, your accuracy, your putting, and your focus. And then during the game, you use those skills to get yourself extra dice or to attack the other players. And I would call it a fun strategy game. Does that sound right, Boda?
If it's not clear, we're talking about a disc golf board game.
100%.
There you go.
The world's most popular disc golf board game.
Well said. Cha-ching!
So in Maple Hill is the number one rated course out of 15,000 courses, and Birdie is the number one selling disc golf board game out of...
All of them.
All of them. Yeah.
All of them.
Exactly.
Double the back pats.
So we've improved. So that's the basic of what the game is. You're rolling dice and moving along a board, mm-hmm. and giving yourself extra dice at critical moments of the game. But we've improved things like the karma cards. The utilization of the karma cards was too specific, and so the negative and the positive kind of overlapped in places. So we made them much simpler. The warm-up zone is much more natural and fair. It literally was not fair in the first game. And the player cards are more balanced. We had some players that were much stronger than other players. And we've done a lot of calculations and play testing, and the cards are much more balanced. Simplified the dice. We have a new expansion course, which is Fox Run. So if you back the Kickstarter, you can go get the Fox Run expansion pack at the same time. And actually, we'll have the Preserve, Maple Hill, and W.R. Jackson released over the next 12 months.
Wow.
And that's
all my favorite courses.
And you mentioned the Kickstarter here. So more about that.
So from... the first day of, I think it was Vegas. Is that right, Boda? We started at the Vegas? Yeah. So from the first day of Vegas until the last day of the Music City Open, the Kickstarter is running. If you go to kickstarter.com and type in disc golf, it's the first thing that pops up. Okay. There's actually a bunch of interesting disc golf things to see on Kickstarter, and I would encourage everybody to go look at all of them. And support all of them after you support this Kickstarter.
Once again, well said. So people jumping on the Kickstarter will have what are the incentives to be a Kickstarter supporter rather than waiting until they can find the game online or at their local game shop? Tell us about those.
With the Kickstarter, there's 5 special player cards that you will never be able to get again. This is the MVP version. So, of course, we have some guy named Simon, James Conrad, Sarah Hokum, Madison Walker, and Raven Newsom all have pro player cards in this game that are only available through the Kickstarter, which right. is, I think it's 300% funded right now already.
Wow.
But still room for more.
Absolutely.
Okay.
100%.
Just making sure about that. So to summarize then, before we let people go and hopefully check this out on Kickstarter, we're talking about Birdie Pro, a brand new game that is reverse compatible with the original Birdie, but is a new game with some new operational improvements, some new, I like to call it equipment improvements, because after all, when you're playing the game, the cards and stuff, they are your equipment, and some different things like that. What I've got one note here that I got to ask, just because it confuses me. What is a termination role? I might have it spelled wrong. I have it spelled R-O-L-E. A termination role, like the role of a player? Or are we talking about a role of the dice, like R-O-L-L? What is a termination role? Because it sounds scary.
Your question is fantastic. You're talking about the chains determine. It wasn't worded well, but I understand what you're asking.
Okay.
You're asking about the chains determination role. And this is one of the fun aspects of disc golf. And actually, we probably don't think it's fun while we're playing, but sometimes you hit the chains. Jen, has this ever happened to you? You hit the chains.
Oh, and many.
As it hits the chains, you don't know if it's going in or not. Yeah, that happens in disc golf. I would say probably more than most sports. And so we actually incorporated this thing called a chains determination roll. And it's a 12-sided die. We had it custom made just for this game. It's 12-sided die, and half of the time the disc goes in and half of the time it doesn't. And if the disc doesn't go in, sometimes it sits under the basket and sometimes it rolls away to circle two. And only one in 12 goes out to circle two. It's not painful, but it is
That's about the same odds, actually.
I just realized what happened with my question. This is a classic case of autocorrect gone haywire. Yeah. On my notes, it says a chance to termination role, spelled R-O-L-E. What you're saying is a chains determination role, R-O-L-L, to determine if your player sunk the putt or not.
Absolutely.
Oh, that's complicated and hilarious.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe for the next version, you could have a terminating role as well.
Yeah, really bad happens to one of the other players, I guess, right?
Automatic DQ.
Automatic DQ. That's really, really funny. So you said, though, that included in the Kickstarter is Fox Run. Coming up will be the Preserve. Will be added to be able to be played. W.R. Jackson, side of the Champions Cup, able to be played. And Maple Hill will be added. Maybe that's the way we get back to Maple Hill just a little bit more with some of the other things that you have to share with us today.
That sounds like a fantastic segue.
Hey, Grant, before we segue, something with the expansion courses that is going to be coming up is each of those will also have player packs
from
different sponsors. And at the end of, I don't know, 10 Kickstarters, you can have your own pro tour using pro players.
Wow.
Okay. So different.
Yep.
Different player packs sponsored by different disc manufacturers or whomever. Players, courses, everything kind of goes together. And eventually it's almost like instead of fantasy football, you can spend the fall with your friends, you know,
on a board game,
being like the, I don't know, would you be like the commissioner still or something over some exactly. kind of a disc golf pro touring season with all the different players going to places and all of that? That sounds like a great way to spend a sequence of Friday nights.
I'm sure a lot of your listeners do have DGN watch parties. And one thing that we do is we'll have a watch party where we're actually playing, it's fun when it happens. When you're playing the course, like Eureka we have on the original game, you're playing Eureka and you're watching Eureka at the same time. And it kind of makes it, it brings the whole thing full circle.
Well, I definitely think when we get to Maple Hill this year that we need to record all of these players playing the game together and actually see who wins. As yes, themselves.
Exactly.
Great.
Yeah. Definitely needs to be recorded.
I know in one of our play tests, we actually did have Simon come over to the house and he pulled Big D Dakota. And he said, that kind of feels like me. So.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, you know, during COVID, NASCAR tried to put something together by having video game NASCAR races with NASCAR drivers driving as themselves in NASCAR video games. There is precedent. It worked. There's mm-hmm. no reason why this shouldn't just, I think this would be infinitely more popular than that. You know, that's just a car sport. I mean,
we're throwing stuff.
We're throwing stuff. And I assume occasionally throwing stuff against the wall if things don't go your well in the board game. All I know is that's how Monopoly always ends at my house. So I figure it can go that way with Birdie Pro too.
Todd, do you have a favorite karma card that he's referencing?
Maybe.
So Grant, we actually have a courtesy violation card. If somebody takes too much time, you can put a courtesy violation on them. And this is like in real time if they take too much time. And if somebody swears, you play a courtesy violation on them. So
ooh.
It's a pretty fun aspect of the game because sometimes, you know, the roll goes bad and you can't help but go crap. And then someone just slaps you and it's just like, ah, and then you have to be good
because
you can't say it again because someone else will get you. And yeah.
Not only that, you can pull the courtesy cards out of Birdie Pro and you can use them the next time your family plays like Scrabble. So someone's taking too long. Courtesy, you're taking too long.
Yeah, courtesy violation card at a tournament.
Oh.
I mean, I think we're supposed to, right?
Just pull the card. Don't say anything.
Just pull the card out and hand it to Jennifer. I can see you doing that to like Hokum sometime
in
the future.
I'm pretty
like,
sure you're supposed to just get the scorecard and write it down, guys. Like, pretty sure that's the rules.
That's really good stuff. Okay, so I don't know how to segue from that now. We haven't got off the rails, but I have no idea what tracks we're on at the moment. Before we leave Maple Hill, yeah.
Yeah, we have a couple of really fun announcements about the MVP Open. The number one thing is that ticket sales. I'm getting emails constantly right now, winter tickets going on sale. Just this morning, we have a tentative release date for tickets, and that is April 11th. Okay. And tentative. Did I say tentative?
You did three mm-hmm. times.
Okay.
And I'd Good. Say it another just to be sure, because I know the kinds of emails you've been getting.
Couple Tuesdays from now.
Exactly right, Jen. So couple Tuesdays from now, Pro Worlds tickets and MVP Open tickets will both be going on sale tentatively. Planned for Tuesday the 11th. And we also have a really exciting announcement. We have a new presenting partner.
Mm.
And this is you guys are getting an exclusive right now. You're breaking news. Breaking news? What is that called?
Yeah.
Breaking
yeah,
news.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So we you guys have heard of the OTB Open presented by MVP, right?
Sure.
Coming up pretty soon.
Well, the MVP Open is now presented by OTB. So we have some symmetry going on the East Coast and the West Coast. And Sean, Jack, and I are good friends, and we will always try to outdo each other with spectator experience and purse and number of spectators. So it's going to be a fun, Sean and I are going to have some battles. And
nice.
And now we have corresponding, I don't know what the right word is. But anyway, we have the same sponsors in reverse order. And
complimentary,
it's really
maybe? I don't know.
Maybe complimentary.
Where's my thesaurus when I need it?
I don't know, but it sounds like a win-win, again, for everyone. The players, probably the staff, the volunteers, you know, the spectators. This is just going to, you guys just battle it out, and we'll take all the funsies.
and the real winners are OTB and MVP, who have two of the top tournaments in the world.
Yeah.
Love that. That's, I mean, and Jennifer, you said it perfectly. This is where competition benefits all the rest of us. Because as these guys duke it out, trying to get bigger and better, we just get the amenities. We get the views. Mm-hmm. You guys as players get.
And both tournaments. Everything. Both tournaments are already just like incredible events to be at. So I'm excited to see how you guys are going to top this off.
Thank you for that, Jen. and I will go ahead and say Sean Jack was one of the first TDs to buy into the vision of what the Pro Tour could become. And he built that event for the Pro Tour, to be on the Pro Tour, I should say. And so similar to what MVP is, we both have this, the spectators are the reason we exist. And so it is fun. And I appreciate you saying that, because I think we both work very hard at making sure the spectators have lots to do and have a lot of fun.
Well, and I think, Steve, this connects kind of well to something else that I know you and Todd have thoughts on. As you are trying to make bigger and better events, and as you are good-naturedly competing, you know, with friends, you know, trying to one-up each other, making bigger events, bigger and better for the players, course design, and things like that, bigger and better for the spectators, amenities, the vantage points that spectators have either in person or through the camera lens. You're thinking about all of those things. And I know that your thoughts on the ever-changing culture of disc golf, I know that they influence your thoughts. They influence your thoughts on course design, the nature of the disc golf holes that we play, the nature of the land on which we build disc golf courses. And I know that you have thoughts on that. And before we let you go, since we're going to wait a few months before we bring you back and talk really in detail about MVP Open and Maple Hill, the property, since we're going to wait on that till it's a little more timely, before I let you go, I'd love to hear some of your thoughts on, well, let's just start really broad, your thoughts on disc culture, where you feel like it is right now in 2023 versus maybe where it was a decade ago, and where you'd like to see it continue to grow. And Todd, you as well. I want to make sure I get both the Boda brothers and their thoughts on these issues.
Well, I'll go first, Boda. I would start by saying disc culture. That's an interesting question. At the DGPT Expo, at the industry, at the conference, I actually gave a keynote talk about disc culture, and I thank you for asking this question. I think as the sport explodes, we actually have a danger of losing what makes disc golf special to a lot of us. A lot of us have grown up with this. If you've been in the sport for more than a decade, then spirit of the game, the culture of the disc, these are the reasons that you love disc golf. I enjoy watching a frisbee fly, but even more so, I enjoy watching a frisbee fly with my friends. And we all share common values of competing with spirit, being a good sportsman, accepting people. You're competing with people, not competing against people. It was really funny. I saw Sayananda's speech after Texas States, and she used almost those exact words, if not exactly those words. And it made me so happy. I was like, she gets it. She's in this. Yeah. She's been around for, I mean, she's
for a while. And if you've ever played with her, she's just one of the, you know, there's only a few people that kind of, it's like a little more difficult to play with, and mainly because they're competitive. Right.
Yeah.
But you have those players that we're still competitive, but we're just as happy to see everyone else on the card succeed as well. You know, and she's one of those players that it's just fun to play with, because when she says great shot or great putt, you know, she truly means it. And and that's when, you know, you get a group of those players together on a card, and you know, everyone's score is probably going to be good, because it just builds that love of the game and excitement to be out there. And good things usually start happening.
Everybody starts to harmonize. The harmonics work together to make everybody bigger and better. And where I'm going with this, or where I went with this in my keynote address, was I feel like we need to embed the Spirit Award into disc golf. And I feel like we need to do it now before it's too late. If we wait 5 years, then the vast majority of people coming into the sport won't have the same history that most of the people in the sport mm-hmm. currently have. So I'm excited to see the Pro Tour start to give out Spirit Awards. I'm working with Danny Voss at the PDGA to develop a way to give out Spirit Awards at PDGA events. And then separately, we're working on a way of getting X Years an opportunity to get Spirit Awards for their events as well. And I don't know if X Years is the right term now, because that's actually a PDGA thing. I meant non-PDGA tournaments as well. They should have an opportunity to just fill out a form and say, hey, I'm running a mm-hmm. disc golf tournament and I want a Spirit Award, and we'll ship them out one. These are things that we're working on to help embed the spirit of the game into disc golf.
I think you may know, but I will say I am very, very honored. I was actually the very first recipient of your Spirit Award at the All-American. So it was kind of funny. Sarah and I were talking about not really the award, but just, I think the conference, you know, and about your speech and things like that. And I was like, you know, that sounds a lot like I always got the All-American award at every cheer camp, you know, growing up. And then later on the next day or whatever, you guys presented me with the Spirit Award, and it was just, man, there's a lot of other meaning to it, but it was really funny. Sarah and I got a kick out of it because we had kind of talked about that. And, you know, that's something in a lot of sports that is given to continue to push, you know, the love of whatever you're doing.
Yeah.
And with your competitors.
Yeah. So. 100%. Thank you, Jen. And I don't want to say congratulations, because that
I'll take it. Congratulations. I was very honored.
Okay. Well, good. Congratulations. it's really interesting. I've won some Spirit Awards in the past, and I don't want to go into too much, but it feels really good to be mm-hmm. recognized in that. But along those same lines, if you get the Spirit Award, you don't want to be recognized for it. Like, you're just trying to compete with Spirit, and that's mm-hmm. kind of the point of it. But recognizing someone that does compete with Spirit helps reinforce the values. So thank you for
motivates the other ones that, hey, this exactly. is, there's more than just winning.
Right. So thank you for being a poster child for this.
Yeah. Thank you.
Is that kind of like being proud of getting the Humble Award?
Yeah. Something like that. Exactly. Exactly.
There's the contribution I was waiting for.
Todd, you didn't see my speech, but I did reference the greatest baseball point ever.
The one I lost.
Yes.
And that's the one I'm most proud of, actually.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Faceball? I might regret this, but what's faceball?
It's a game that we play up at our camp in Maine. We stand out on the dock, and you try to throw a ball that the other person can touch but can't catch. And it's a game of honor. You have to try to touch it. Like, the one he's referencing is, if I caught the ball, I would have won. If I would have missed the ball because he made such a bad throw, I would have won. But if I tried my hardest and just touched it, I would have lost. And that's what happened, is I'm like, I've got to try my hardest on this because this is a game of honor. So I was like, well, I touched it. I won because in my heart I won.
Right.
But I lost the game, but I kept the spirit of the baseball alive by making that attempt to lose.
Perfect.
I almost understand everything you just said. I'm right there. I think what you're saying is, if you attempt to catch, but fail in your attempt to catch, you would have been better off not attempting to make the catch at all and just let the bad throw go. Is that? Am I hearing that right? No. Clearly, no. I am even more lost than I thought.
But Grant, it's good that you said that, because now Todd gets to clarify.
Okay.
Yeah, so now, and we, edit all that out earlier.
All right.
So if he's throwing and I'm catching, if Steve throws it and I catch it, I get a point. Mm-hmm. If Steve throws it but throws it so bad that I can't catch it when I'm jumping into the water to try to catch the ball, I get a point.
So bad that you can't. So we're jumping off a dock or something. We're like,
yeah.
Highlight reel catches off the dock is what we're talking about. Now I'm with you. Okay.
And then if you jump and you just touch it, then Steve would get the point. And this all comes from watching football with our dad.
Yes.
He's like, that receiver touched it. He should have caught it.
Aha.
The impetus for baseball.
Nice.
And the throw that he's referencing, it was the last throw of the game. And mm-hmm. everything was on it. And I threw it so bad. And Todd was, he was going under the water. Nobody can see me. My hand's way up in the air. He's going under the water. And like, as he's going under, he's reaching as high as he can. And I see the ball hit the water. And he comes up and he says, I touched it. I touched it. Like right as he was going under, it hit the fingertip, just like you're showing, Jen.
Oh, and man.
If he had tried any less hard, he would have won. But he tried as hard as he possibly could and he managed to lose. And so,
which you feel like you win because you literally gave it everything you had.
Uh-huh.
Exactly.
There's amazingly, it all makes sense now.
There's a
it totally makes sense now.
Yeah, there's a small part of me that's proud of the throw that I did because it was perfect. But I'd rather have been Todd and lost the game. I wanted to try that hard.
But it's kind of like meant to be. Like everything had to have worked so poorly yet perfectly to take place.
Yes.
So it's yeah.
So that's
serendipity.
This summer, so watch out for it.
That's right. So anyway, that's disc culture and all this stuff, and why Todd and I sort of took that to a new sport and. Now our next generation, my daughters play it now. So it's kind of fun.
Aw, that is awesome.
In broad strokes, are there any other areas when it comes to disc golf that you see that you would like, not that necessarily you would succeed, but that you would like to influence, if you could, you know, the direction when it comes to, say, course design or when it comes to, say, other aspects of running either pro or amateur events. Are there any areas where you just have, maybe you just have a passing thought and you're like, I wish we'd see more of that. I wish we'd see less of that. And it's just like something for people to sort of chew on, you know, while they're thinking about their favorite sport.
Hey, Bud, I'll jump in real quick and then I'll let you finish with the real answer.
Okay.
But I guess my concern is the length of the courses. It just seems like, it's all it's going to become is arm farms and barn bombers, and the technical aspect and the finesse and the touch aspect is going to go away. Kind of like with tennis when they got away from the wooden rackets. You just mm-hmm. don't see the spins that you used to because now everyone's got the graphite rackets. They're just mm-hmm. as hard as they can, and that's all it's all about. Personally, I prefer the technical shots, the ones that take a little finesse, that take the touch, and not just the pure raw power.
Right.
Okay.
That's kind of like we were talking to Cheryl and Tita, some of our legends of the game, a few episodes back. And Cheryl was like, when they went to the beveled edge, like it wasn't as fun anymore because of all the things that she could do with a frisbee, an actual frisbee. And so that's kind of the same thing. Like if we're just getting out there and ripping it as far as possible, there's some other parts to the game that are very difficult besides just throwing a frisbee very far.
I want to piggyback off of what Todd said. Just building on that, I'm just going to say par fives suck.
Whoa.
Boom.
But you don't have to take my word for it. Okay. Well, I would not be doing my job if I didn't say and give you at least a little bit of rope here to explain why you feel that way.
So when you look at ball golf or traditional golf, it's the number of shots it takes to get to the green plus two. When you look at disc golf, the number of shots it takes to the green, basically plus one, is how,
or none sometimes,
or none. Yeah, because you throw the green being a 10-meter circle. Mm-hmm. If you can get it to the green in one or two shots, that's a par three, because that's how disc golf is. Mm-hmm. Is you're gonna one putt instead of two putt. So when you say a par five, you're taking what should be happening is you're taking four shots to get under the pin, and then you drop it in for your five. And in traditional golf, you're taking those three shots. So when we see traditional golf play a par five, we think, oh, that'd be cool in disc golf. But the games are significantly different on the putting green. So it doesn't make sense. I'm all for a long par four. Mm-hmm. I'm all for an 1100 foot par four. That actually makes sense in disc golf. But an 1100 foot par five is an eagle fest. And what happens in disc golf when they have these par fives, it's, can I get an eagle on this hole is the question.
Yeah.
And so there's that aspect of it is, it's just not, it's like having a par six in traditional right. golf. It just doesn't make sense. But right. the real reason they suck is because I'm watching DGN now. I sit at home and I watch disc golf. And Jess and I will just sit there and we'll spend all day Sunday. She works on Saturday, but all day Sunday, we'll sit there and watch together. And when there's a par five, either I ask her or she asks me, was that a good shot? I don't have, where are they throwing? I don't know what's mm-hmm. going on. Are there four landing zones here? What are those trees doing in the field? It's boring to watch.
Mm-hmm. You go make popcorn. Like, oh, wait, par five. I've got time to go pop some popcorn. Time,
yeah. yeah. It's a 1,500 foot hole. They're going to throw yeah. three shots. The first two, I'm not going to have any idea if they're a good shot. Like, mm-hmm. unless the commentator, Nate Doss, tells me that's a good shot. I go, oh, okay, good. But I could just, I could listen to PDGA radio at that point. So, yeah. So, but anyway, if for the players, for the spectators, par five suck. Maybe they're mm-hmm. good for sponsors because you have 1,500 feet of wallboard. But other than that, nobody wants to set that up anyway, by the way. It's right. not a good idea right. for sponsors.
No.
So in my opinion, par fives are just awful. And people need to, just like Todd said, it doesn't need to be, what did you call it? An arm barn or something like that?
It's
like a reverse alliteration.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't need to be an arm farm. We can design good holes that are long par fours, short par fours, long par threes, short par threes, have a nice
placement shots,
have a nice par 63 course with 9 threes and 9 fours. Some are long, some are short, and we don't need a par five where people just throw it and the players might know if they're doing well, but the spectators don't have any idea.
I had a drop in. I had multiple tap in par eagles here in not only the Shelly Sharp, but the Memorial. And, you know, the one was pretty cool. I mean, literally touching the pole, but I had several in the Shelly Sharp. And by the time I had multiple eagles or I would just start laying up the eagle. I wouldn't even putt the eagle because why not just take a tap in birdie, tap in birdie, tap in birdie. And so if there's a lot of them, it definitely takes away, even from the player's point of view, the excitement and difficulty that it really does take to get an eagle. Yes, they should be attainable, but don't just leave them sitting out on the counter where we can grab them walking by. Like,
it's a hot take. I'll give it that. Yeah. It's definitely a hot take and worth like talking about. I do agree though, with your talking about how in ball golf, very base at its basic par is set by however many shots it takes to get to the green plus two. In disc golf, the putt has sort of a different weight overall when it comes to your score. In ball golf, I know that, I think on the PGA Tour, it's something like 5 or 6 feet. And at that point, even the top golfers in the world, it's a coin flip whether they're going to make it or not. That's a pretty short putt. And at only 6 feet away, 50% of them of those putts go off.
And sounds like they need to practice more. I'm just kidding.
So clearly our ability to, depending on the wind and other factors at the top level for players at times to be able to go even some distance out into circle two and have better than a 50-50 chance of making that putt, it changes the dynamic of what a putt is in relation to how it impacts your score at the end of the day. So it is food for thought to have to think of what a par four is and what a par five is completely differently, because you have to think of the putt itself sort of differently when it comes to scoring. So that alone is worth like chewing on and like thinking about.
And I'll throw it out there just because I'd like to know Steve's thought on it. The reason that this Arizona tournaments had the par fives were because pro and AMs were playing the exact same tees. So what are your thoughts on that? I mean, that's why they were par fives, because it was difficult for not as advanced players to play that course.
Rather than saying pros and AMs, can I say pro women and men, pro women? Yeah, pro women and pro men playing the same tees?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
I haven't thought through the AM side at all.
It's a whole nother.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I see what you're saying. So you're talking about a different but similar comparison. Okay.
Yeah. Right. So pro men and pro women playing the same tee, you have a 1,000-foot hole. Yeah, you could say that's a par four for the men and a par five for the women. But what you're doing is you're changing the game for the women.
Right.
And so on the men's side, it's a power shot and a control shot. On the women's side, it's a power shot and a power shot. And what I would do is I would look at course design, and Sarah Holcomb will talk about this all day long, wonderfully. And what she does is she says we want to have a similar birdie rate. And I'm gonna disagree a little bit on that. And I'm gonna say what we need to have is a similar number of power shots, similar number of fairway shots, similar number of approach shots, and similar number of putts. Right now, I believe that there are not as many talented women as there are talented men. So
I agree to that. I do not take offense to that at all.
I wasn't worried about you taking offense. Therefore saying we have an equal number of birdies, when we have an equal number of top talented men and women, yes, we should have an equal number of birdies, but we're not there yet. And if we had good course design, actually the number of birdies on a course would actually be a perfect metric for watching the women catch up to the men in skill. So unfortunately, we're not able to do that because
our putting percentages are not the same as the men. We do not putt. And so we can get the disc there. I mean, there's a number of times I play with the boys and probably have better drives and shots, but they're going to always come in with a way lower score than mine. Yeah. And women do not putt as equally great.
You're also talking about field size too. You know, when you have a bigger pool, then you have like, you know what I'm saying? Just statistically speaking, when you're talking about a bigger pool,
percentages.
Right. So a pool of 100 versus a pool of 40, out of that pool of 100, you're going to have sort of more in that top category because it's 100. So there's going to be, say, 25. A quarter of 40 is only 10. So you see what I'm saying?
Anyway. So while we're on this topic of par fives and arm barns and arm farms, it makes me think also about golf courses. Disc golf being played on golf courses. And this will be my last point, but it's a small
another
one,
hot take.
Another hot take, maybe.
Ooh.
Depends how you view it. I think it's time for disc golf to leave the kids' table. And by that, what I mean is we're playing disc golf on ball golf courses. When you throw a disc onto the most beautiful part of a ball golf course, obviously the area that if I'm watching, that's the area you want to go. And then they raise the red flag and you're out of bounds because you're on the putting green. That's ridiculous. Design the course so we're nowhere near the putting greens.
Right.
I don't ever want to see a red flag because I'm on the best part of the course.
Which is also the reason that we're not supposed to be on there is because we shouldn't be tearing up their expensive greens. So we shouldn't even be near to where we can risk tearing it up.
Put me at the kids' table and give me a piece of steak like the bottom of a shoe because I'm a kid. That's what they're doing. And I think it's time for this to be over. We need to throw away from the greens and don't even bring them into play. They're doing great jobs with the designs going through the woods next to the fairways. I love it. And then you can fill the fairways with fans. Traditional golf courses do have a place in disc golf. The putting green does not. It should not be anywhere near a disc golf course.
What do you think about the bunkers?
You could do it back. Is you tee off by the green and you throw towards the tee.
Absolutely.
This guy's a genius.
That'll work.
But don't get on the tee.
Pretty face.
Not just a pretty face. I wish we didn't look alike.
So I'll give you this. Some of the takes were hot. Some of them are warm. Because I think a lot of people
educational.
I think a lot of people would agree. I think a lot of people would agree with you, or at least would agree that it's worth conversations. It's worth having an influence on future decisions for, say, a course designer. I think we just are coming off of, as of when this airs, a couple of weeks ago, there was a lot of praise for the Texas States courses, which was a silver event. It was being played to kind of a little bit your point, Steve. It was being played on a former ball golf property that had been kind of reclaimed by, I guess, the city of Houston as sort of a multi-use green space. The greens had been allowed to grow over. If you squinted, you could kind of tell where a green probably used to be, and you could tell kind of where a bunker probably used to be. But they had been allowed to grow over. And what you still had, though, were those amenity type things when you think about spectators. They had the open spaces, some pathways. Yeah. And what it also did is it made the out of bounds lines, which had to be added. You've got to at times add out of bounds, even if it feels a little bit artificial. You know, we all have our debates on that. But in this case, it didn't feel jarring or out of place because it was at least able to follow some natural contours and it was able to shape a hole, which to your point, Steve, in many cases was going through the woods between what had once been two golf fairways.
Yep.
And that got continuous mentioning all weekend long was the out of bounds feels right. Yep. And it doesn't feel weird like when a ball golf green is OB and you're like, why is this OB? It's a great place to be. That didn't exist. So it didn't feel awkward or misplaced. And it got a lot of praise from players and a lot of praise, I think, from spectators going, I can watch this and it makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm. There's nothing worse than as a player throwing a shot that feels absolutely perfect. And you're like, I couldn't have done that any better.
Yeah. OB. Red flag.
Right.
Yeah. So okay.
That's cool. It for me.
Well, Todd,
we covered a lot of stuff.
Todd, you want to try to make anybody mad? Go ahead.
Camera operators are underpaid.
Oh.
That's not going to make anybody mad, Todd.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think everyone would love that.
Everybody's cheering right now. Fellas, that's great stuff. And I like that we've got some things that we can all think about. As listeners, because I'm sitting here, I become a listener when you start sharing opinions like that, because you've been so close in particular to the Maple Hill property that you've got such a huge data set to draw opinions from. So, it's already making me think I'm going to be thinking about the par five thing. In particular, I think that there are some really interesting points there. There are still some par fives that I love, but it gives me a context for some of the par fives that I've seen here and there on courses I play or courses I watch. And I go, I don't know about this. So it gives me some context there. So that's really good stuff. Thanks for that. Where do we go? Is this the natural end of our conversation?
I think that's a wrap up. Yeah, I think that's a wrap up. But I definitely think that we need to have you guys back on later in the year to hype up the Maple Hill.
Yeah.
Oh,
and then we can roll into all other kinds of, I mean, like, think of all the things that can happen this year that we can just get down and talk about.
Absolutely.
In a few months.
So. It's going to be, my goal in starting the Pro Tour was to be able to sit back and watch disc golf on TV, and good golly, I can. So
yeah,
I am pretty darn happy.
And we'll be able to talk about all the things that happened at OTB that you're going to top.
Absolutely.
Take notes, and then we'll revisit those notes. Mm-hmm, yes. Mm-hmm. Good stuff, guys. One more reminder, though, on that Kickstarter for Birdie Pro. You got maybe a few more days. You got maybe a few more days to jump on that. But otherwise, hey, many thanks to the Boda Bros. Got to ask one more time. Boda. Where'd that come from? Boda.
So that's a funny story. We were living in Pittsburgh, and our parents sang choir at our church. And one Sunday afternoon, Steve and I got to go listen to the church choir sing songs from a bunch of musicals to raise money to get new choir robes. So you can imagine how excited two teenage boys were to after church, instead of watching the football games, and listen to Broadway musicals. So we're sitting next to each other, literally rolling our eyes, and a musical, Broadway Bound, comes on. And they've done every other letter, red, blue, red, blue. And I'm just like, I elbow Steve, and I'm like, hey, look, every other letter of Broadway is Boda. And he goes, hey, look, every other letter of Bound is Bud. I don't know if you remember the Budweiser frogs.
Yeah.
But oh, yeah.
We started doing that. Boda, Bud, Boda, Bud. And it stuck ever since. And that was 35 more years ago. So
I like it.
There you go.
I love it, guys. Well, thanks so much for your time with us today. Thanks for sharing about both your game, but also some of your other valuable opinions. And Todd, in your case, thanks for visiting us all the way from jolly old England. We really appreciate it. We'll have you back again soon.
I'll have a pint for you guys tonight.
All right.
Sweet.
Just for me. Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
See you.
All right, bye.